Right, we are back. Hey, this is the Soul Savage Show on Studio W, The Buzz. Back to you, Q-Lin and EB. Or should I say QB?
QB.
QB.
Not to be confused with Lil' Kim.
That's right. No, you got to make that distinction.
Okay.
Not Lil' Kim.
Not Lil' Kim.
Not quarterback.
Oh, my goodness.
On a football team. I was about to say a football show.
Right.
A football team, no QB or nothing like that. But we are back.
We are back.
Soul Savage Radio, y'all. I'm back sober. I don't know what happened last week.
No, I guess you don't.
That show was nuts. I listened back to the show.
It was crazy.
It was a continuation. I was drunk. I wasn't even going to say I was drunk adjacent because I was all the way drunk.
I didn't know.
No, it wasn't a partial drunk. It was a full-on drunk. The fact that I fell asleep live on air should have let y'all know.
Fell asleep. Wait, but she started speaking patois, and I was
y'all should have known that. Those are two things that are clear signs. When I start speaking patois and when I start falling asleep, because those are two signs. I go to sleep, and I start turning it up. That's it. Listening to reggae music. Those are the clear signs right there. And because you can't say I say something crazy, because I always say something crazy on this show, so. You know, I speak drunk thoughts all the time, so it didn't have nothing to do with that. I talk like that all the time, but when I'm drunk, I just go to sleep. That's it. That's pretty much, you know, it's no crazy, you know, antics or anything like that. It's just I go to sleep or just talk more, even more crazy. That's about it. But I had fun. It was a fun birthday. It was, listen, Michael McDonald and Chaka Khan performed at the Hollywood Bowl. I went a week prior. They performed at Dallas. Not Dallas, Urban, Texas. It's like a little far out from Dallas.
Perfection.
Toyota Pavilion. And they went to the Hollywood Bowl, and I was just there for it. I was like, you know what? I need to extend this a little longer. Those are two of my favorite singers of all time right there. When you talk about Michael McDonald and Chaka Khan, I was like, absolutely, I'm going again. Absolutely. I don't know how many times I've seen them in concert, but it was fun. We were definitely lit. We were sitting in the Garden Bowl, so it was drinks upon drinks. Because they just be bringing the shit. The white staff just be bringing the shit. You'll see about five or six white staff just be walking through there. I'd be like, hey, give me another one. We was told up that concert. And edible situations was happening. And then we was pre-gaming before we even went there. So it was nuts. That was a fun time. And then it was like a 7 day, I rest the next day. Usually you rest on the 7th day, but I rest on the 8th day. I had to prepare. That's why I can't drink. I would be like a functioning alcoholic. Cause that's what I used to do when I was in, when I talk about the morning, I'm not talking about like, okay, usually people when they get off work, they have like a little nice glass or whatever it is or their choice of alcohol beverage. No, it was morning.
No, from when I wake up.
Drink. Like, as soon as I wake up, like, a couple of drinks. And then later in the day, it just spread out through there. And I would just drink it like it was water. Like, that's, like, kind of a problem. So I was like, let me cut all the way back on this. Like, you can't keep keeping that up. You have a definite alcohol problem. And so I only drink occasionally now. Drinking ain't really my thing. Now it's like I switched off vices to, like, but even I don't even, like, do vape pens like that. I do it so often now, but not all the time. Because you can't function like that every day. Or you'd be an addict. So, it's just, I could go days drinking, and I could go days without drinking. So, I hadn't drunk, I think, since, like, maybe that last, when we was in St. Louis, when I drunk that bullet. That was, like, a couple weeks before that. But I hadn't drunk since then, since, like, February or January. It was, like, early in the winter. The last time I had drunk until I went to St. Louis, but yeah. That's how it is, cause it's like, people like, turn to alcohol and stuff like that. I'm like, I don't do that. It's just, you just find other outlets to, you know, get rid of energy and stuff like that. I might be using another vice that might seem like, y'all need to know, grown-up activity. That might be, but y'all need to know all that. That's too personal. We don't get that. That could be vice as well. You need to watch Red Table Talk. They talk about that on there. of that, you know, talk about different addictions and vices and stuff like that. People use to let out different outlets and stuff like that when they, you know, different stuff. But yeah, I had fun. It was a fun birthday. And then I went out to eat with my dad the other week when I came back. And it's like, with parents, it's like, I love it, but then it's like, if you want to talk to your other child and know about what they're doing, like, you want to know their updates, like, go talk to them. Like, I don't care. Like, it's always like, you know what your sister did? No, I don't know what she did. Tell me. Or your brother. You know what your brother did the other. It's always something they did. I'm like, I don't care. It's hard to say that. It'd be like, man, I don't care nothing about them. I just want to say, fuck your kids. That's what I really want to say. it's not appropriate to say that to your father. So it's like, all right, you just got to listen to the story of the 17th thing that pissed him off that week. It's and they're all adults. Well, except for my other brother. He's about to turn 18. I think in a week or two. Shit, I forgot his birthday. Oh, that's how... I'm like, he's younger than me. I'm like, after he turns 18, I don't remember half their birthdays like that. But yeah, one of my brothers, he'll be 18. So I was like, they almost grown. So it's like, you know, who keeps up with grown people other than your parents? And then they want you to, like, it's just mostly those conversations. Like, I'm like, I definitely got to be drunk for this. Like, even though I didn't drink because I was feeling sick. And I forgot to tell you, I almost threw up the day on my birthday. We went out to eat, and I didn't even eat. I maybe took, like, two bites because I told you we was already drinking. I almost, it was, like, right here. It was, like, my eyes was watering and my mouth was watering. I was like, oh, shit. I'm about to throw up. I had to go to the bathroom and walk it off because I was like, oh, shit, I'm about to throw up in this nice restaurant. But it didn't happen because I'm a G. I've been doing this. It just, when you don't, that's what I'm saying. Like, when you go out till, like, you don't get home till, like, 6 o'clock in the morning, and you don't have time to rest that off, and you just keep going, that's what happens. I don't even think I slept that night. I was, like, just up the whole time. Because after 6 o'clock when the sun's out, it's like, what's the point of going to sleep? Especially if you, like, just, you know, in a different city, you're not at home, whatever, so you got to be up and running around. I'm like, I might as well just stay up all day. But, yeah, that's a savvy update. EB, what you got going on? What's going on with you? Drinking adventures?
Yeah, no. Speaking of birthdays, I do have to do this. Today is my mother's birthday, so I have to.
Oh, shout out to
man, y'all Leos are just like, y'all don't stay out of my life. I don't know what's going on. It's like everybody's a Leo. I called her this morning. I talked to her, or this afternoon, actually, because I'm not a morning person, so she understood. Like, no, I'm not calling you in the morning. But, yeah, no. This past week has been actually a lot better. I went to see, you know, the group Tuxedo, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, me and Miss TLC, we went to see Tuxedo the other night.
Shout out to Miss TLC.
And I will be honest, at first, I love Tuxedo. I love their sound. But I did not think I was going to have as good of a time as I did. It was so good. You want to talk about, like, people who sound just like the album. Like, the vocals were there, all the musicians on stage were jamming. It was a good time, and I just, like, I need more of that energy. I need more of musicians who know what they're doing. I need more people who sound just as good as they do on album, you know, when you see them live. And it's just been, like, I'm still on a high from that, honestly. And when I tell y'all, I did not think that I was going to have as good of a time. I had no idea, but it was one of the best shows I've been to this year, and we've been to a lot of shows this year, but it was just the energy in the room, and it was funny, I was laughing with Miss TLC, because I was like, you know, we went to the show, and what it looked like was a whole bunch of black dudes and their white girlfriends, and I was talking shit, but then I was like, but you know what? I probably look like a black dude with my white girlfriend because I'm with you here.
Right, exactly.
And he was like dying laughing. It was like, wow, yeah, we look like we fit right on in. But no, it was a great show. Tuxedo, if you have the chance or get the chance to go see them and they're in your city, I do want you to go. I mean, they're doing you know, that throwback Zapp and Roger sound that not many people are doing now. And it doesn't feel like a novelty or, you know, just something to do. Like, you can tell that they love it.
Yeah, you know, it was actually two groups. I think one of them had to change their name because it was, I got confused because it was two black guys named Tuxedo. I think they had changed their name because of this group. Because I remember them sending me music because I was like, wait, hold on, this ain't the, I was like, this ain't the other Tuxedo. I was like, that I was thinking of. And I was like, oh, it's two of them, but I think they changed their name because they have that name. I think they got it trademarked or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't even know that. Wow.
Yeah, it's like two different groups in Tuxedo. Or I'm pretty sure they changed it because I ain't heard from them since. So
oh, yeah, they probably.
I think they might have changed the name. Yeah. But, man, you get all the good stuff. Like, Dallas, like, not to, like, dish, but we get, like, you know, Raheem Devon and stuff. No disrespect. It's just, like, you know, I never get my favorite to come through.
Oh, my like, God.
It's like in Dallas. It's like I got all L.A. and New York get all the best ones in Chicago. Chicago,
no,
too.
No, I will say, like, because I, like, working as long as I did for Live Nation, like, in D.C., I felt like in D.C. we got all the best shows for so long. But since I moved to New York, it's definitely like, oh, okay, New York gets good shows. I'm also noticing that Atlanta gets good shows. But, I mean, I never really looked at, like, who went through Dallas or who, like, travels and tours Dallas.
I'm just playing. It's a lot of that.
I mean, you had to throw your boy under the bus, so.
No, it's like the ones like the Super Pack. Well, we did get some good ones like the past couple years. Like, I mean, in terms of like a tour, like a joint tour, like with Robert Glasper, like he brought on like, or the Roots, they brought on Robert Glasper, Bilal that one year, Chaka Khan was all on one show. Chaka Khan was a surprise guest, so she wasn't even on the bill. She just was a special guest of theirs or whatever. It was fun. But yeah, I was just playing around. But I'm just saying in terms of just local, like y'all get the local spots and shit. Like, y'all get all the motherfuckers, like, y'all get everybody, like, Erykah Badu might randomly pop up on somebody's stage at a hole in the wall. Like, that happens
a lot. All the time, like, all the
She'll just, in Dallas, yeah, she definitely hits the local scene real hard. But I'm just talking about local acts, like, the Blue Note, like, little spots like that, like, y'all get all
like, little, I know we have this one spot I actually just discovered called Club Groove, for anybody who's in New York, and on Monday night, Cheryl Pepsi Riley does an open mic jam every Monday.
She still does that? I'm jealous because the last one I went to was like in 2011. I haven't been to New York in several years. And
when I went, she
did that, and I can't believe she still did it. I think I've been a couple of times, but yeah, I can't believe she still does that. That's crazy.
No, she's still doing it. I went to see a friend of mine perform on Monday night. A friend of mine actually was performing with her band at 7:00. And I stayed around, and they were like, oh, Cheryl Pepsi Riley up next. And I was like, oh, okay. And just, like, the caliber of musicians who come through there, like, local, homegrown musicians. And it almost makes you wonder, why are you not, like, selling out shows in Italy and Paris? And, you know, it was that good. But for anybody in New York, Club Groove in Manhattan, it's in the Village in Manhattan, Monday night at 9:00, I think it starts at 9:00. Cheryl Pepsi Riley to open mic.
So y'all check that out. Will, if you're nearby, I think we're ready for 6 minutes of rage. And, yeah, you're going to need that. Oh, he's ready. Look at the rage, y'all.
Oh my God. 6 minutes of rage. Welcome everyone to the Soul Savage Show. 6 minutes of rage. Yep. 13 million reasons. Hey, you know this name, the NRA, National Rifle Association, or does it stand for Nazis Rule America? We'll get back to it in a minute. Hey, incites violence. Oh my goodness. Oh my words. They do not incite any violence. As a matter of fact, my rhetoric, brings people together. Oh my goodness. Can you believe that the orange crown, the orange mushroom with the small stem said that yesterday? He brings people together with his rhetoric. Oh boy. Yep. I tell you how much it brings people together. Hey, there's a 39-year-old Montana man that was arrested for fracturing a 13-year-old boy's skull. Yep. At a fair. Let me take that back. Was that a rodeo? Just because the young man would not take off his hat during, guess what, the national anthem. And guess what his lawyer said? It's Trump's fault. Trump made me do it. The lawyer says that, hey, his rhetoric drove that guy to say it. 39 years old, fracturing a boy's skull, bleeding out of his ears. Oh, Mitch McConnell, goose neck, gobble, gobble, blocks two bills, like I said last week, to perfect our voting. The integrity of our voting, guess what? Now he's delaying, bringing the Senate back to Washington to vote on something. Guess what? He's been blocking all the time. Guess right. That's right. Preventing these arsenals of weapons that's coming out. Yep. Bump stocks. Oh, I know the, yeah, you can say, yep, bump stocks. They got rid of those. But this guy who came, into that nightclub in Dayton, Ohio, guess what? He had a fully automatic rifle with almost 100 rounds in it. So was he out to hunt deer? Oh boy, I don't think so. They still, the motive isn't clear yet, but six out of the nine people who died were black. He even killed his sister. And there's rumors that she was dating a black man, but I don't know. I don't have any firm details on that. Crowd size. Oh, the stock market, the economy. Oh, how big is my crowd? How rich am I? How smart I am? Oh, I'm the least racist. You know, men who normally brag about the size of their toys, they normally have small appendages. We'll be back to them later. But the apologies. Oh, he did apologize. Didn't he say something about, white supremacists? And also, racism has no part in the country the other day. Oh, my. Well, guess what? Oh, he was reading from a teleprompter. Oh, and in the hospital yesterday, he's bragging out about how big the crowd size is and everything like that. And he met with most of the staff and took a photo op with them. And eight people who remained in that hospital, they refused to see him. They refused to see the president. Man, you got to be really, really bad if you drive, fly all the way to Texas and people say, nope, don't let him in here. I don't want to see any mushroom crowds here today. Oh, but there were two people that came to see him. One was a baby. They'd had the baby that you guys remember the parents who shielded their baby from getting shot down there in Texas. Okay, and the baby survived, and the baby's out of the hospital. So he had some of his clowns to go out and get the baby and bring the baby to the hospital. And one other person who was already released, they had to come back. Nobody there wanted to see him. Can you imagine that? You're the president of the United States, and nobody wants to see you at all. Hey, it makes no sense at all. There is a name, guys, that I want you to know. That's Toni Morrison. She died on the 5th of August. Now, in case you don't know, Toni Morrison, she won the Nobel Peace Prize, the Pulitzer Prize, for literature. She also won the Presidential Medal of Honor from Barack Obama, presented to her by Barack Obama in 2012, born in Lorain, Ohio. Died in New York City. She went to Howard University, Cornell University. Genre, American literature. Notable works, Beloved, Song of Solomon, Tar Baby, and The Bluest Eyes. This lady was outstanding, and if you haven't read her works, I would advise that you might want to pick it up. But back to UQ land, but guess what? There's 30 million reasons why this cat will not fold. And can you imagine, in sight of everything that's going on with the gun violence and things of that nature, these clowns would not make a move on that. That's what I'm really angry about. Hey, back to you. This has been the 6 minutes of rage.
Yeah. Evie, you gonna go first?
Yeah, I definitely do want to say rest in peace to Toni Morrison, man. I remember, Jazz was this first book that I read by Toni Morrison, but if anybody knows anything about me, I grew up in a very small southern white town, so I didn't even know Toni Morrison before freshman year at Howard University. we read The Bluest Eye. And from then, it was like Song of Solomon, Sula, Tar Baby, and Beloved, which was the movie that Oprah and Tandy Newton were in. Toni Morrison wrote that book. So she's definitely, you know, HU alum, one of the greatest literary giants of our time. And there's been so much debate, you know, since she passed, with people saying, you know, no, she's not just a black author. She's an American author. And I get that.
That's right.
Toni Morrison let it be known that what she did was for the culture. What she wrote, it was from the black experience. She wanted her work to be remembered as, you know, I'm doing this for black people. Not to say that she isn't an American author, because she is, but she liked to make the distinction that, you know, specifically, you know, I'm not writing from the white gaze. I'm not right. writing from the experience or for the benefit of a white audience. I'm doing it for us. So I do want to say rest in peace to her.
Right. And E.B., what I was referring to was that she was recognized around the world. And, you know,
you're right.
She came from a black perspective. And there's no argument that at all. But I mean, people, yeah. I was looking at all of the tweets and things like that about her. And there were people from all over, everywhere that acknowledges.
From everywhere. Yep.
Everywhere. Yeah. Just an amazing, amazing woman. She was also, I believe, professor emeritus at, Princeton University.
Yep. She,
brilliant.
Like her legacy is, you know, I mean, you won the Nobel Prize in Literature. You won the Pulitzer. Like,
yep.
Her legacy is one that will be unmatched for a while, because, like, even now, I'm thinking of not just, and I'm glad that I'm saying this, because not just women or black women. I'm thinking of any author right now who has been as profound as she has throughout their entire career, and they haven't. They just haven't. At all. So she will be missed. You know, she definitely was a light that we had, and I'm glad that her work will live on in print, or I mean now through digital media, through the internet.
Right. And with that, you know, Q-Lan, I had to end this 6 minutes of raid with something more positive, like the brilliance, the work, the genius that this woman brought, you know, to our culture. So, and she will be missed.
Yeah.
Q-Lan.
Did we lose her?
Is she, back on? I mean, should I play guilt?
I'm trying to gather my thoughts.
Oh. I thought I was going to have to play Gil Scott
no.
In the bottle.
In the bottle. No, I'm not kidding the show. It's just her work. It's about the same to me as Prince, musical-wise. And so when I saw that on my phone, it was like, please let it be for something other than what it usually is when it's a
right.
headline. And I was like, oh, man. Because we go to break real quick because I gotta gather myself. We'll talk about Toni Morrison some more, but we go to break real quick so I get my thoughts together. If you're ready,
Let's do this. I'm going to switch songs on you. I'm going to play your last one first. How about that?
No, and sometimes deceive. The ones that you care for give you so much pain. Oh, but it's alright. They're both one in the
and Frankie Beverly, Joy and Pain. And we are back. This is the Soul Savage Show with Q Lynn and EV. Hey guys, I got a question for you before I get off. What is it about these guns? Why a lot of guys, and especially white guys, they have to have a gun? I heard a study, something popped on the news today about almost 9,000 people died this year due to guns. This is, the year isn't over yet. What is it? Now, Reverend Demery, you guys know him. He's on the Boomerang Radio Show with me on Sundays. He said to these guys, to a lot of guys, it's a phallic symbol, right? And you know what a phallus is. It's a penis, an object that resembles a penis. Okay. So I'm wondering, I'm just saying, Evie, Q-Lan.
I mean, listen, I think it says more about this country that year after year, study after study, we can examine and analyze the data that says, you know, that gun deaths are on the rise or gun violence is on the rise. And we still allow the NRA to keep padding the pockets of our politicians who make this legislation. It says so much about us. I don't know what it is about guns. I mean, well, I do know what it is about guns. And that's partially right, Will. It's a phallic symbol, but also it's steeped in tradition. I know I'm from South Carolina, and I know my dad and my uncles, like, everybody owns guns, like shotguns, handguns. It's like a thing. I think I'm probably the only one who don't own a gun. I mean, my 4-year-old niece just got her gun. I mean, everybody got a gun. But it's something that's steeped in tradition, but also people use it to prove something. It's to prove, you know, a certain level of manhood or bravado or a certain level of even love for tradition. I know, especially in the South, it's like the old South. Everybody got to have a gun. You know, holidays, you know, they go off and shoot some rounds in the air or whatever. But I think it says a lot about us that we allow this to continue and we allow the politicians to continue passing legislation that allow the dangerous weapons on our streets, and the NRA pays them to do it.
Right. But, you know, coming from the South, Evie, I can understand that, you know, because it's either like maybe for hunting or protection, or it could be targeting or whatever it is. Right. That's a whole different deal.
Yeah.
I guarantee you that most of the people that you know, including your family, do not have arsenals, a whole arsenal of weapons, including AK-47s and things of that nature.
Right. No, none of that. And I think that goes back to the whole thing about tradition, because, you know, even though my family still owns these guns, you know, back in the day, like my great grandfather, like it was used for hunting. In 2019, I tell you a lot of things about my daddy, but I can tell you this: he ain't hunting nothing. So it's that same thing where people hold on to these things. And I mean, they don't own any, you know, semi-automatic weapons or, you know, military grade weapons, which still blows my mind that people can get their hands on this and are allowed, you know, to own these weapons that are used for military purposes, which blows my mind. But I don't know what to tell you. I don't.
Right. Well, you know, back in 1994, they had an assault ban, a ban on assault rifles and guns and things of that nature. Clinton signed it into law, and after that the thing expired. And you know, and with the era of Trump, he's in the NRA's pocket, man. He's talking about, yep, I'm gonna have some tougher restrictions here, might even have a back.
Yeah.
They don't even want to do background checks. Are you
no
you got to be kidding me.
And that's the problem. And you know what, that is part of the problem. It's something that I don't understand, because anytime we have a mass shooting or a tragedy that happens, the first thing they yell is about mental health. That's the first thing they yell, which I think is a whole bunch of BS, but that's the first thing they yell is mental health. And if that is the case, then why would you not want people to go through background checks to make sure that the chances of them owning a weapon will be less catastrophic than the next person?
Absolutely.
So, I mean...
So you're right. You can't have it both ways. You're saying, okay, well, mental health reasons. So why wouldn't you want to do a background check? If that's your spin on this thing, right?
If that's your spin, then I would think if anytime anything happens, the first thing you say is mental health, I would think if anything, you would want to make it harder for people to get their hands on weapons, and that a background check will be the first thing that you do. A mental health evaluation will be the first thing you do. You know, you want to make sure that the people who are buying these dangerous weapons, these military grade weapons, are at least appear to be competent and know you want to have some sort of a security that they won't go and do what everybody else is doing and, you know, being terrorists, domestic terrorists. And carrying out these hate crimes, so that's what they are.
Right. And you gotta look at it like this too. This guy drove between 10 and 11 hours all the way from where he was down to El Paso.
Yeah.
Right? So think about
a
crazy person who just want to kill up some people. He's not gonna drive that far. He'll go right around.
It was clearly plotted. He had a plan. He thought about it.
That's right.
He drove. Not only did he drive that long, but what he posted, he wrote that and saved it as a draft and waited to post it until he was there. smart enough to know if I do it now, the police will be here or somebody will stop me. He waited to do that. So that's, to me, that's not mental health. That is, you're feeding into the rhetoric that that man sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest is feeding us. And, you know, you're going after a town that is, you know, majority Mexican. That's what you're doing.
That's
and
right.
It's the same thing in Ohio. You know, people don't, people haven't classified that as a hate crime. But when you look at who was murdered or and who was injured, including his own sister,
that's
who
right.
was there with the black man, it's clear that
come on now.
He had some sort of issue with her being with this black man or black people in general. So he went to where he knew they were, and he just let loose.
That's exactly
so I think
right.
We have to start examining stuff like that. Not mental health, but, you know, I saw they were trying to blame it on video games and say...
That's know, what Trump said.
...are violent. And, yeah, Trump said that. And my argument would be, well, if anybody knows anything about Japanese video games, Japan has some of the most violent video games on this planet.
That's right.
But Japan is not seeing what we are seeing in terms of mass shootings. They're not seeing what we're seeing in terms of hate crimes and in terms of the country just being divided by not only by class, but also race.
There's no question about it. You know, and I tell you what, and out of 50 states, there's only 17 states that have what they call a red flag laws. That means, let's say if I got a cousin or an uncle or somebody else or maybe a friend or whoever it is, and I know they are dangerous and they could be a danger to themselves or society. I know they have weapons. There's only 17 states that have laws that you can call up the police and they will come out and investigate the situation. Okay, so what's happening to the other 33 states? I mean, come on, man. You know it's all about the NRA, and because I told you the NRA called up Trump and says, look here, if you go on and put a ban on these things right here, your supporters are not going to like it. And remember, we gave you $30 million the last time.
Wow.
Yep.
See, I want us all to be more vigilant and to pay more attention to not what they are saying, but to what they are doing, because everything they're saying is smoke and mirrors.
They're trying
to throw us off and to make us look one way when they're doing their dirt the other way. And I want us all to pay more attention to that and see these people for who they are, including the man sitting at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue Northwest. See them for who they are, for what they are, you know, if it's white supremacy, if it's, I'm sorry, they don't call it white supremacy. What are they calling now? Neo-nationalism?
Any of those things, yeah.
Right. If it's that, you know, I want us to see them for who they are, not only the people in the White House, not only his administration, but also the politicians on a local level, also the businesses that support Trump or who support the things that he says or his ideologically. I want us to pay more attention, and I want us to get these people out of office, man, because nothing's going to change until we do. And I think it was Julie that was on here a couple weeks ago and was saying that shit is going to hit the fan. Yeah, it's going to hit the fan. And I don't think it's something that we collectively are prepared for, but it's something that will have to happen before we see any real change.
Ain't that scary? That's scary. That's real scary.
Terrifying.
Yep. And Q Lynn, I don't know where you saw it or not, but the owner of the Miami Dolphins, and he also has two billionaire owner, and he owns Equinox and another company as well. Well, these other two companies of his, people are boycotting right now because he's supposed to have a fundraiser for the mushroom tomorrow, at his mansion, right up there in upstate New York, New Hampshire, wherever it is. I think it's New Hampshire. Anyway, and guess what? Mm. The tickets start at $250,000.
Yeah. And that's intentional.
Of course. So, yep, and so he says, well, look, And so the companies that he owned, the other company, it says, well, look, he has nothing to do with the day-to-day operation. We do everything. We reach out and we promote racial equality and things of this nature. But there are a lot of athletes and people and customers saying, look, nope, you can't have it both ways. You can't support this man. Then you talk about equality, racial equality and everything like that at the same time. You know, so it's going to hit the fan.
Yeah, that's Stephen Roth, because he also owns, in New York, he owns the company that developed Hudson Yards, if anybody's familiar with that whole area in Manhattan. And he owns Equinox Gym and SoulCycle.
He does, SoulCycle and Miami Dolphins.
Yep,
absolutely. So anyway, guys, back to you. Q-Lan, you have any comments on what we're talking about?
It's a whole lot. It was like when I saw the news, it was like Dayton, Ohio first, and then it was like El Paso after that. And then just reading the stories about some of the people that were killed, like the married couple, like the man dying trying to protect his wife, and then also the parents dying trying to protect the newborn baby. It's like, when you hear stuff like that, it messes with you. And then on top of the Toni Morrison thing, and subsequently, when I was on the plane Sunday, she had a book, it was a source, it's called Source of Self-Regard, that came out earlier this year. I've had it since April. And I was, just, during those times like that, it's just, I just go to it and actually have it, because I always travel with it. She had, like three chapters that were basically essays and excerpts that she's taken from different colleges that she's spoken at. And one of them, like, you know, she was talking about, it says, I've been told that there are two human responses to the perception of chaos. It's naming and violence. When the chaos is simply the unknown, the naming can be accomplished effortlessly. A new species, star formula, equation, prognosis. There's also a mapping, devising proper nouns for unnamed strips of geography, landscape, or population. When chaos resists, either by reforming itself or by rebelling against imposed order, violence is understood to be the most frequent response and the most rational when confronting the unknown. Catastrophe, wild, rational responses may be censored or incarceration and holding camps, prisons, or death singly or in war. There's, however, a third response to chaos, which is I've not heard about, which is stillness. Such stillness can be passivity and dumbfoundedness. It could be a paralytic fear, but it also can be art. And it says writers climb their craft near to or far from the throne of raw power, military power, empire building, counting houses. It says writers who construct meaning in the face of chaos must be nurtured and protected. It says certain kinds of trauma visited on peoples are so deep, so cruel, that unlike money, unlike vengeance, even unlike justice or rights or the goodwill of others, other writers can translate such trauma and turn sorrow into meaning, sharpening the moral imagination. It says a writer's life and work are not a gift to mankind. It's a necessity. And then the next chapter is talking about fascism, and I think it stood clear, like, this is clearly the Trump presidency.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that she was describing.
Yeah.
It's kind of uncanny that you can look at her speech from 93 when she won the Nobel Peace Prize, first black writer to win that. When you listen to that, she's basically describing authoritarianism. And she talks about it a lot. And what's crazy is that I was watching an interview with Nikki Giovanni. They were on Democracy Now. I was watching it earlier today. Nikki Giovanni, Angela Davis, and Sonia Sanchez.
Sonia Sanchez, yep.
They were on talking. Basically, Nikki Giovanni was talking about that. Basically, what you just said, to sum it up, the impeachment, like he needs to be gone. And they need to move quickly on it, which I agree.
Yeah.
And just so many different things, and it's like, at some point, that's all it is, and pretty much what her work is that it's not our issue. Like this race thing, this race war that they want to create, that's their problem. Like it's not on me, mm-hmm. it's the big white people. Just like when I told y'all that story like last year, the year before, when that racist guy was like, yo, you need to move your car, I'll call the police. Like,
yeah.
Who the fuck are you to tell me to do that? This is the first, Eric, this is like maybe a month and a half or maybe 2 months after the Trump election, like, or when he was elected president. That's when that happened. And it's like, really? Like, you feel that emboldened. You felt that superior but just because I was black. Because it wasn't based on anything else. He didn't know if I lived in that area, like, it's a nice area, and he's there because of a program, a government-funded program that's no longer there, but you're there because you feel superior. And it's like, dude, I never am out, like, it's just certain things about this is just plain as day. It's like either, like what Nikki Giovanni said, is either you look at the face of evil and recognize it for what it is, or you're evil. It's like mm-hmm. you're on the side of evil. It's that simple. It's like it's not something that's a ABC 1, 2, 3. It's like either you side with righteousness or you're evil and wicked, and you're okay with it. And they've shown that they're okay with it. So what do we do after that to the people that say, oh, voting doesn't matter? Clearly it does. to the popular vote that Hillary Clinton won, clearly votes matter. But like I said, it's clear as day. It's just a matter of, okay, he's incited all of this. Like, we know the source of the problem, but, oh, you're going to fix the problem. What's the dynamics of the politics of getting him out of office? Is it like, okay, immediate action? Clearly not, because he's still there. Like, nobody's just outraged by these mass killings. Nobody's, even the bills that they're trying to get, he's not going to sign any of them. They're not going to sign any of them, any of the bills that's trying to prevent these mass shootings and keeping it out of the hands of these mental illness, the ones with I put quotation marks around mental illness. It's like, you know, it's clear as day what it is. And I remember I wrote after the Charleston 9, when those people got killed, I wrote an article, mm-hmm. and you can pretty much just put it right here. And I was like, because at the time when I wrote it, I didn't know that they had, because these facts came after the fact, after they've already captured them. Like, I think it was like some months down the line, they said that they took them to Burger King. I was making a joke, being sarcastic, saying that, oh, they took them to get, they probably rubbed his head and gave him a smart water and some trail mix or some shit. Like, that's what I wrote. And come to find out, they took him to Burger King, so he got a lucky meal. Yeah, they took him to the Burger King. I was being sarcastic. I wasn't even being serious. But it happened. Like, that's how far away from, I guess, humanity we're there. Because I was like, me being sarcastic was thinking of something that's the lowest common denominator of being human. And they did it. And it's like, wow, really? That's where we're at right now. That's the lowest part. A man can't even get his license and registration out without you, like, setting off, like, 4 or 5 rounds in them. But you feel comfortable with this murder, this killer, this person that just killed 9 people. You're comfortable with him. You're not unsafe.
No, because
it's like
killed
those
the right
facts.
People.
Right. So, yeah, I'm just tired of that narrative. I think it's just so redundant at this point to keep saying, like, the media said, oh, mental, like you were just saying, mental illness and all that stuff. Because it's just ridiculous. It's like, come on. Like,
it is.
You know, just like that idiot on Fox News talking about it's a hoax. Really? It's like,
yeah, no.
It's like you gaslighting. It's like to the point now, it's like, now it's reactionary. Now you're going to see, you want a race war, now it's going to be people responding back. How are they going to respond back after that? That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah,
it's like,
no matter what, we're
going to
look like we're wrong.
Yeah. Then it's going to be a whole situation. When people start responding back and shooting back and stop becoming victims, well, not victims, but become slain and they actually start shooting back, then that's when they're going to intervene. But until that happens, so that's what they want to race for. That's pretty much
exactly what they want.
What they represent is that. And when they get across the right people, I'm not fighting any of that. Don't misconstrue what I'm saying.
No,
people listening in. That's where it's going to go. If y'all allow this man another 4 years, it's going to be exactly that, a race war. I'm not exaggerating. I'm not putting on.
No,
that's
what
it's going to be. It is exactly that. And I told everybody when that situation happened, at that moment, I was like, if he could have put out a gun, he could have put out a knife, any of that. I was not afraid of that man. If he would have done anything to me, I would have been defending myself at that point. Because at that point, when I started raising my voice, and I told him, I threatened him. I said, you better get the fuck out of my face. And I meant every word of it. And I wanted every part of my body language for him to see that I wasn't playing around with him. And if he wanted something to happen, it was gonna happen then. And it ain't been me looking for violence. It just happened. Like I was randomly walking into Starbucks, bought my drink, forgot my charger, went back to get my charger. On my way back into Starbucks, he walks in front of me, stops me, and tells me that. The whole sentence. You don't park your car here. Leave, move, or I'll call the police. That's the first sentence he says. Like, that's how they moving out here. Y'all see all these videos of these women. I just saw one recently of this racist white woman cussing at this black woman, calling her the N-word, putting her finger off like she's gonna do something. Like, these are like real people, like, in, that work as doctor's offices, you know, teachers that teach your kids. These are the ones that are promoting white supremacy, that believe everything Trump says to be true and factual. These are the people in the streets. You know what I'm saying? And so, it's going to get to that point. It's going to get to that to where this is, because they feel like people saying that they're emboldened by this dude. Like, it's clear.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah,
I know what I'm going to do. All right, shit, Rick, listen. I'm not scared. I'm not, listen, if in the face of evil and wickedness, I'm never going to cower down. Because you're not, you don't have superiority over me. You're not better than me. Nobody, I don't think I'm better than anybody, and I don't think anybody's better than me. That's how I think. And so anybody coming at me on some racist, oh, I'm better than you because you're this, you're that, that's your problem. That's not my problem. So yeah, I don't look to fix racist. And I ain't gonna do that. Like I said, that's white people's problem. That's your crazy ass uncle that keeps a 30-year-old shotgun that wants to relive his youth. That's your crazy ass uncle that you gotta talk to about putting his guns up and having a racist problem. Like, that ain't black people's problem to educate racists. I'm not doing that. I'm beyond that. So, it's like I said, I just echo what Angela Davis and what Nikki Giovanni said on that show of just getting as much people out to vote. Like now, I don't even talk about this, but I'm mentoring a few kids that are, you know, preparing. I'm trying to, basically the mentorship program is to help them, you know, once they graduate high school, you know, just to, you know, set them up, you know, stuff that they need, like driver's license and getting a job and stuff like that, I'm helping them with. And one of them, this is going to be his first time because he turns 18, I think, and so in the mid of October. And it's going to be his first time voting. I'm like, yo, you going to vote? And he doesn't even get, like, high school. Like, they don't even talk about politics like that. Like, he said all they talk about is Trump and stuff like that. Like, he don't even know the basis of politics. You know, shout out to Isaac. But, yeah, he don't know. Like, I have to teach him, give him books to study about black history. I gave him. It's multiple books I gave him, but one of them that I wanted him to really read was it's a history of black, basically the history of black America, by John Hope Franklin. It's like, it goes all the way back to Africa. It breaks up the different countries, like the whole continent. It breaks up all those different things, and it goes from that to the Middle Passage to like post-slavery, pre-slavery, post-slavery, the civil rights era. It goes through like every era. I think it goes up all the way to like 2004, I think. the history on it. But yeah, I'm giving them that. I'm like, yo, read that first, and then I'm giving them other books, and you know, and trying to get him to get government classes so he can learn the branches of government. Because I'm like, you gotta like that's, I'm just giving him stuff to study on, like know the three branches of government, like know this stuff. Cause he don't know nothing about like voting and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'm just giving that. But yeah, I've just been, it's just been a crazy week reading all that. It's like, how can you like take in multiple mass shootings and think like people are going to have like regular days? You know?
Right.
It's just, reading those stories, those of, like the ones I just mentioned, it's like, man, like this is what it is. Like people, they're just really enamored by this fascist in office. You really think this dude is for you? Like it's beyond mental. Like you, like premeditated, like traveling hours to go to El Paso to do that. Like you got, yeah. Like you got fucking headphones on, like the earmuffs thing, the keep from the shots ringing off in your ear. Like that's how prepared
yeah.
you was.
You're prepared for it, right?
It's just amazing to me. But yeah, that Toni Morrison one took me out, though. But yeah, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, I think in my, like, this is what I want. This is like, I yearn for the day that we, not even as minorities, because I can't speak for all minorities, and I'm not speaking for all black people, but I yearn for the day that we don't have to say, I told you so. Like, we saw this coming, that we see that your love for power and privilege and how comfortable you are with your privilege and your fear of losing it, it's related to hate, and it drives the hate that we experience in this country when, you know, these things can go on and the white people turn a blind eye. They're willingly ignorant to the fact that this, what we are experiencing now, it is driven by hate. It is, it's fueled by hate. And it's race related, and they're unwilling to acknowledge or see that. It's just like the, when they were talking earlier, maybe it was last week, when the quote unquote, lost tapes of, Reagan and Nixon surfaced, and Reagan was calling, the blacks or the Africans monkeys. It's one of those things where black people have always had to say, well, yeah, we know that. I told you so. We've been knowing, you know, we've lived it, we've experienced it, but you have refused to acknowledge it. And I want that to happen. And I just don't know how that's going to happen. I think that it is going to take a lot. I mean, it may take it all falling apart to put it back together. I'm not sure, but I want that day to come where we don't have to say, I told you so. Or we saw it, or we knew.
Yeah, I don't think, like, you know, that's why, you know, Toni Morrison, it's like, a special, her books are special, her words are special, because she, like, really had her hand on the needle of, like, the temperature of what America was in different
yeah.
eras. She, like, was there for it. And
yep.
it's like, now, the beautiful thing I think of it, because I'm like a natural optimist, I always look at the positive. She's just to paraphrase what she said. She says that the racists always look like the majority when they're really the minority. And that's always how I felt. Like, because mm-hmm. they don't speak for the what they're scared of. Why did the shooter in El Paso do what he did? He said fear of brown and blacks taking over. It's already here. This is the thing people don't realize. This is why things are where they are. Technology proves, data proves that in the next 10 to 15 years, when it comes election-wise, everything's going to be turning blue. And technically, I was born and raised in Oklahoma, so people think it's a red state. It's not a red state. Oklahoma, I've been in every part of Oklahoma. Yes, there's some rural areas that's completely conservative, but most of it is liberal. Like, Oklahoma City is a liberal city. The thing that keeps it moving, that makes it a red state, is those rural towns. That's why you have the gerrymandering that happened during the mid-election, those little towns that make up so much because they're the only ones that turn out for certain votes, the local elections and stuff like that. But it's really a liberal state. And the data proves that in the next 10, 15 years, that all everything that was considered conservative, those states like Oklahoma, all those are going to be blue. We already seen it with Alabama, with Florida, you know, if you want to count that as a rigged election as well. All those states that were, like, comfortably red, they're turning blue because those people that populate the area, all the different brown community, the Middle Eastern community, the Asian community, all those brown people that are a part of coming here from those different countries are being educated, way more educated. And then the ones that are born and raised in America, they outshine every white person that considered themselves applicable for a job that they wanted, mm-hmm. that a brown and black person supposedly took from them. And so when he talks about bringing back coal mines is the only one that exists now in India, and they said that's about to be over with in the next 2-3 years. So this white America, this make America white again storyline at his Klan rallies, that's what I call Trump's rallies, his Klan rallies, those Klan rallies that he holds, he's feeding dreams, because the America that you once knew, that your grandfather knew, your racist grandfather knew, no longer exists anymore. And so that brown and black America, it's already here. Like, it's already here. The America that you wished would happen, it no longer exists. Like, we're not living in free civil rights movement, that era, to where even though black America really functioned at a high level during that time period before the government, you know, ensued and broke up families and all that stuff, you know what I mean, not to get into a whole historical thing about that, but all of that America that they wanted back then with their grandfather, you know, all the good old days when the blacks just stood that did what they were supposed to do, didn't, did back talk when it was whites only, that America, it don't exist anymore. They want it to be like that because they feel like that's what it is. And that is not the case. And so I just say this on Tony. I know we're getting ready to end the show. I say this for last because it's like I'm like emotionally drained from it because it's like it kind of blew me away. Just to be a little transparent, I grew up in Ardmore, Oklahoma. It's bigger than it was. It's becoming like a little big city. It was pretty small, like, you know, like a rinky-dink, like you drive down, you know what I mean? Like you got one stop, like it used to be like
yeah.
that. Like you only had like two stores, three stores.
Yep.
Like we had like a Kmart and a dollar store back in the day. But now it's like, it's way more now. Now they got like Chili's and Applebee's and shit. They got like movie theaters. They got all kinds of stuff going on now. It's because it's between Dallas and Oklahoma City. And so
mm-hmm.
they're becoming more business-like, and they get more business that way, you know, being right in the middle. It's like the perfect spot. So I grew up in that town, and I had a multiple black teachers, but most of my, I'd say from the 12th grade, I maybe had about 5 black teachers, and most of it was in grade school, I think. I had two black teachers in grade school and then two in middle school and then one in high school. Two of my teachers in middle school, sixth grade, they combined, we were like the first class to go to middle school, the sixth graders, because they had like a sixth grade center, but they had tore down and then we had to go with the middle school, so we were the first sixth graders to go to the middle school because it was just seventh and eighth grade. And so mm-hmm. in sixth grade, that's when I had Miss Collier. That was my sixth grade teacher. And my English teacher in eighth grade, I had Mrs. Moore. Sixth grade, Miss Collier, she was like, she had all kind of black literature. That's all she had. I remember growing up, she had Toni Morrison, like, I vividly remember, like, her, she had different curriculums that she would give us during the year, and she would have us pick, like, our books. I remember one time we had to choose between To Kill a Mockingbird, and it was just, like, various books, and I remember seeing Sula, the Toni Morrison book. I was like, I just like the way it looked, and I would just pick books off the way it looked, like, with albums, like, you know, like back in the day, like when you go to a music store and you see like the cover, like if it was nice looking, you just buy it. Like that's how I would pick books. And I remember seeing that book and getting it, and I just remember like reading, and I didn't even get to like maybe the third or fourth chapter, and I would just stop because I'm like, whoa, what am I reading right now? Because it would just take me back, and then it was like the same with James Baldwin. And I remember, like, do you have any more of her books? And she was like, yeah, I got Bluest Eye. She had Bluest Eye. She had Song of Solomon. I think that was the next one I read. And then Jazz, I remember reading all those books. And then I remember going to the library, like, getting all her books at one time. And I just remember reading it. And when I associate Toni Morrison, I associate her with, like, fall. Because that was, like, during, like, the book fair. You know, it just, like, brings back those memories of, like, because I'd be like, oh, I'm getting this, I'm getting that. And so I was associated with like my nostalgia, like just being like needed. Cause I was like the kind of student to where like I would do my homework in class. So I wouldn't have to do it at home. Cause I would like, cause I always wanted to play when I got home. So it was like, I was read and stuff like that and played chess. And it was like, I want to do that instead of doing homework. So I would finish homework in one class. Okay. Third period, fourth period. I'm going to finish this. Okay. The teachers would let me do it because I would get done, and they would give us pop quizzes, and I would pass all of them, so they would let me read books while the other, and I would just sit and read the whole period. Like, it'd be like an hour, and I'd just be sitting there reading. So that's what I associate with Toni Morrison. Like, people, because we're getting ready to end the show, but I feel like literary icon is, like, one thing, but I feel like Toni Morrison was a literary prophet.
Yeah.
Because the things that she tapped into with her writing, like when you talk about Jazz, when I read that and reading it like 13, 14 years old versus being adult, it's like a whole different meaning when you really like comprehend what it was that she's talking about. She's like giving you imagery of a time period, but the crazy thing, she's not even using the word jazz throughout it. Like, she's talking about jazz, like that time period, but she's talking about the people. Like, she's defining a language of people, and I think it was Dr. Cornel West that said that she was the first black writer to give black people languages. Like, you know what I mean? Like, culturally, the first, you know, and just different time stamps of different eras, the way she tapped into it, like Song of Solomon, the story, it was just, she was so vivid with her painting a picture, and it wasn't even about, like, I can't even contextualize, it's just, the way she wrote it, it's like, you're not even trying to say, okay, what's the next thing? It's like you're just in that moment trying to figure it out, because the language she uses, the way she uses a word to describe something, like she says, like, silence is noise, is like, could be the loudest noise, like thunder. It's like certain ways she said stuff that, you know, but just to end it, because we at the end of the show, but she has this quote that they brought up, Sonia Sanchez brought up, she said, we'll be judged on how the way we love. And it's like, that sentence, you think, like, you can overlook it and just think it's that. But the way she said it, it said, we'll be judged on how the way. Like, that's actionary. Basically saying that love is an action word. You know what I mean? And it's like, who we are as humans. So I'll just say my savvy heathen talk is just, you know, make love a priority. You know, because when you, I just feel like that's her work, is making love priority, making people the priority. Who's the people? The common everyday person. Like, not categorizing people by their class, by their gender, by any of that. Just loving in like the simplest way possible. But you got savvy even talk so we can wrap up.
Yeah,
I'm getting long winded.
I'm gonna actually give a Toni Morrison quote too. If you wanna fly, you gotta give up the shit that weighs you down. That's my favorite quote by her, and I feel that's what we all should do, is we got to give up the shit that weighs us down. We all got to fly. We all got to soar one day.
Man, I could go all day. Man, it was like a punch in the gut. It felt like the Prince all over again. That's what it felt like. Like, literally, it took the wind out of myself. But I think the dope thing about social media, like, it was people created quote threads from her, and it just was like, oh, that's my book right there. There's quotes from Paradise or quote from, you know what I mean? Thomas Holland.
Yeah.
Those little quotes in there, they were pulling from. I'm like, yo, this is dope. But yeah, thank y'all for tuning in to Soul Sadness Radio. Thank you to DeAndre. One of my favorite guests. Especially since he picked Patty in.
Oh, man.
Yeah, the game.
You know, top five right now. He's
EB.
Right.
EB.
I know I had to end with something, but thank EB. You, DeAndre, for coming on. I appreciate you. You're great. Beautiful human being.
Great.
I appreciate that.
Right. No, great artist. Great artist. No question about that. Matter of fact, I'm getting comments. I shared your post. Earlier, Q-Land about him, and, people love him. Great voice, so unique. I mean, just incredible. And you know, not only is he great, he's also very gracious.
Yeah, very
gracious cat. So that's pretty cool. But we noted that, What's Wrong With You game is rigged though, right? Hey, that's the end of the Soul Sadness show.
Just to quickly say something real quick, not to play a little, I know we're a little bit over, but I'm almost done. The reason why I do that game like that, and it's another reason why, you know, cause, and Toni Morrison, I didn't even realize it until somebody, texted me and was like, yo, you remember you talking about her during Craig Seymour's interview? And I was like, really? And I went back and listened to it, and I was saying that the way he wrote that Luther Vandross biography book, I was like, it was so encompassing because it made me stop. Like, you know, I was referencing EB, the music, you know, like when you listen to music and you gotta like pause it because it's so good.
Yep.
Like that's how I was referencing. I was like, it reminded me, like, I was telling him it reminded me of Toni Morrison and James Baldwin, the way he was writing musically. And so, but yeah, I do that game like that because I want most of the time when you, do stuff like that, whenever you do the comparing thing, people compare the artists. And I wasn't trying to compare the artists. It's like, what do you think of this? Like, who just keep on there? But if I put it in a way, if I feel like you're badgering, if I make it to where, like, I'm badgering you, then you got to be honest.
Right.
And that's where you get the real information. So that's why I do the game like that. And people will get honest because they be their real self. I just appreciate them because they hit me up and be like, yo, I can't wait to come on and play the game. So, and then they reference, you know, when Aretha Franklin passed, it's the anniversary of that coming up. That's the first thing they reference. Like, they, like, 3-4 guests that have been on, they're like, yo, I was thinking about the game. You know what I mean? Because it's just impactful. I just try to do something different with that portion of the game. But yeah, thank y'all for tuning in.
Thank you so much.
4 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. We got a lot of great things coming up. I can't wait to share with y'all, but we're going to be out. Y'all listen to the smooth tunes of William the Bond. Thank you. Be out, y'all. Just be thankful for what you got. Diamond in the back, sunroof top, digging the scene with a gangster lean.
My name is Richard Lobel, and I'm the founder and director of the Relationship Center of South Florida. we're a general county.